I'm thrilled to be backstage with our maestro, Bramwell Tovey. Bramwell, that was a tremendous first half. It was so exciting. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
Bernstein's Prelude, Fugue, and Riffs that opened the program is such a striking and fun to listen to piece. Leonard Bernstein called jazz a special beauty. How does this speak to you about his feeling for and his affinity for jazz?
Well, I actually had a sort of firsthand experience of Leonard Bernstein's affinity for jazz because I was conducting this piece with the London Symphony Orchestra, and Bernstein came to the concert and he wandered into the dress rehearsal, complete with cigarette and entourage, and came up on stage, and I actually conducted the piece with him next to me in rehearsal. And there's a little video of it on YouTube, which is quite fun. But he had such, I think, an intrinsic, implicit feeling for different styles and genres of music. And he, like any great, he just made that style his own. So this piece, we all think, all the performers think that it's just extraordinary music because it captures the essence of the big band sound and the solo clarinet lines and the piano writing and forges them into a distinct whole. There's just one tempo that unifies everything. And of course, it's relentless. So in terms of his feeling for jazz, well, everything's notated in this piece, but it sounds at times as if it's just spontaneous combustion, as though the trombonist and the baritone sax player and the first trumpet and the piano are just, especially in the last moment, just riffing on the line. But actually all those riffs come from the calculated pen of Leonard Bernstein. So I think it's an incredibly successful work. It has to be, in my view, the most successful piece of notated jazz in all the serious symphonic literature. I think it's wonderful.
It must be difficult to notate jazz on the score so that it sounds spontaneous. How do you think he was able to do that?
Well, I think by being able to improvise and being able to do that as a pianist, I think that was first and foremost. But he also had, as we know from his musicals, like West Side Story and Candide and Trouble in Tahiti and all these pieces, his operas, musicals, whatever you want to call them, he knew how to create the catchy earworm. And those earworms, which elude so many people who are in pursuit of them, just seem to pour out of him. And I think they've given his music a longevity, which is thoroughly deserved. He was often derided during his lifetime. People didn't like the idea of crossover and so on and so forth. But I think it's that ability to create those catchy earworms that so irritated his contemporaries and so entranced, as it were, those who've come after him. So I think that's how he did it, because he just knew how to capture everyone's attention and knew how to riff himself.
His career was remarkable because he was not only a pianist, but conductor, collaborator, and communicator and educator. You also have a very similar career. Did Leonard Bernstein influence you in the way you wanted to shape your work and your career?
Well, that's kind of you to say so, but remembering, of course, that Leonard Bernstein wrote West Side Story, and I haven't done anything even approaching that. Before I met him in 1986, I was well aware of him. I'd seen him on television. I'd seen his education programs. I'd watched him conduct live. I saw him record Mahler's Second Symphony in Ely Cathedral in England with the London Symphony Orchestra. And I admired what he did greatly. I was extremely shy in those days. When I met him, I was 32 years old, and I had come in at the last minute to substitute for Lucas Foss, who was ill and unable to conduct the concert. And when he walked up to me, I have to confess I was completely terrified, because I had held him in such awe as a career model in pretty much every way, that I was worried that I was either going to be disappointed or that he would make me feel so nervous that I would be incapacitated. But in fact, neither of those things happened. He was extremely collegial. He was unbelievably supportive and friendly. So my shyness sort of evaporated, which I find amazing now looking back on it. And I think what he did as a musician himself and as a conductor and a composer all the things that he did, I think have been done, were done so superbly. I mean, his musical lectures on TV are just fabulous, and they look as up to date as ever. Even watching his introduction of Igor Stravinsky, when Stravinsky conducted the Firebird with the New York Philharmonic, you just see a man who is just so genuine and just so completely open and honest. And I think that's really the key to it all, because we can't try and be somebody else. There's no use me trying to be like Leonard Bernstein. That job's already been taken. It's just important to be ourselves. And whatever you play and whatever instrument you are, and I think whatever you do in life, I think just be yourself. So yes, he was a great influence, but I think the lesson he taught me most of all was be yourself, because everything else is taken.
That is just beautiful advice. Along the lines of bringing jazz and contemporary music into the concert hall, which Leonard Bernstein did so brilliantly, we kind of heard that on steroids today in that marvelous concerto for vibraphone and marimba, transcribed by Christopher Davini, on jazz guitar tunes by Pat Metheny. And I had to ask you a question about yourself. You not only conducted, but you hopped down off the podium during, I think, the second movement to play the piano. Tell me about that.
Well, Chris had asked me if I would conduct the whole piece from the piano, and we were a little nervous about doing that because the piano part's quite big, and I think the orchestra need a conductor quite a lot. So I talked to various people about it, and I talked to Chris about it, and we decided that we'd have the second piano there, and if I really felt there was a place where I could contribute, that I would step down. And there's that marvelous moment in the second movement where there's that revolving harmonic pattern comes around several times. And suddenly I realized, my goodness, there is a hole here, because you're suddenly wanting an extra voice. So I utilized the top of the piano where those kinds of notes in the scale aren't being used. And so when I stepped down from the podium, I've done this in lots of different pieces. The famous piece where I've done this with the Philadelphia Orchestra, lots of conductors do it, is to step down from the podium and to play the Jasper Brown solo in Catfish Row of Porgy and Bess, good George Gershwin. And when I did the whole opera, Porgy and Bess, with the Boston Symphony, apparently there was this lady in an expensive seat in the stalls who said to a staff member, "What on earth is he doing?" Because people aren't used to the sight of the conductor stepping down. But actually, it's quite fun to join in with the music making. At that particular place, it's like a jam. The whole orchestra is jamming with the soloists, and it seems to work really well. Most of the time, of course, we have our heads in the score, but sometimes it's fun to have the score in your head.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Bramwell Tovey, for taking time to speak with us. We can't wait for the second half in the New World Symphony.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.